Hello, everyone. This is Ralph from Palindrome. This show is called Loudly Quiet. Let's talk about the future of blogs for businesses. My co-host Khalid might not be coming, but in the meantime, our guest is already here. Andrea, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Hi.
So is it Andrea or is it something fancy like Andrea?
You know what? My mom was pretty fancy when she named me. She named me after a French soap opera actress. So it's Andrea.
Andrea. Well,
but we common folks, I call myself Andrea, so it's fine.
Andrea, right. So this show is called Loudly Quiet. Let's talk about the future of blogs and businesses. And me and my co-host Khalid, we've been talking to people from different industries about how they use their websites, how they do content marketing, how they do digital marketing, how they use their blogs, and about what they do in general. So Andrea, if you don't mind, please go ahead and let our listeners know a bit about yourself and what you do.
Sure. So as we all know now, my name is Andrea, and I have a company called Hub & Company where I help creators, and that's creators across the whole spectrum, musicians, artists, writers, podcasters. I help them find the right words to connect intentionally with their audience to create fans for life. I'm all about building relationships and helping my clients find the right words to do exactly that.
Yeah, personally, I like how you're very focused on a certain niche. I think it's very important to, sort of like zoom in on a niche. But let's take it back a little bit. Like, tell us a little bit about your own background and how Hub & Company got started.
Sure. I started in PR when, after college. I went to school for PR. I had my internship when I was in college, and it was really exciting because I was there for a long time. It was way more than just a semester, and I got to work on a campaign at the Milwaukee Art Museum. I'm in Milwaukee, and so our large art museum had 13 artists coming to town, and I got to do the PR for the traveling exhibition, and it was me in a room with all of the guys from Philip Morris and Miller Brewing. So beers and cigarettes and me in a room working on the campaign for this traveling exhibition. And I was hooked from then forward. I just couldn't get enough of it. And I think it fits me very well because I've always been a communicator. Like, of course, you don't know that when you're young, but I've always talked a lot. I used to get sent home with daily report cards from school because I was talking so much and disrupting the classroom. So this sort of found me, to be honest with you, and I've stuck with it. I've worked for nonprofits. I've worked for Fortune 120 companies. And I've worked for small businesses, and now I work for creators, and I just absolutely love it.
So, are you yourself a creator?
Well, that's the funny thing. No, I'm not. And when I started working with musicians, and this is how it happened. This is literally how the business started. I was working at a large nonprofit, and I just wasn't happy because it was so big that it was run like a corporate environment. And I just knew early on that I was not cut out to be a cubicle person. That's just not me. I don't work well in that environment. So my friends were like, you're young. Why don't you go and start your own business? And I went to Barnes & Noble when people used to go to the bookstore, and I started looking up the music business. And the woman who managed the music department came over to me, asked me, if she could help me. And I told her what I wanted to do. Not only did she give me some good books, but she actually took me to a meeting of an organization here that was like a professional organization for musicians. And I got involved and I got on the board and I really spent a lot of time there. And the business just sort of sprung up around that, my involvement with musicians on a daily basis as part of this organization. And that's how I started working with creators.
This era that we're in, we are already actually in this this time with this creator economy, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, like before this, I mean, it's a very big shift. Actually, I was reading a book quite a long time ago, I think before the whole creator economy thing took off. It was called An Army of Davids, and basically,
Oh.
I don't even heard of that book, but it was basically about how David versus Goliath, right? So
Yeah, yeah.
like the big media companies, the Goliaths, right? Being taken down by an army of David's regular folks, regular people, right? And that's what we're seeing around us today, right? Like people listening to and being influenced by and buying from regular people, right? YouTubers, writers on Medium, so talk to us a little bit about what you see happening in terms of the creator economy around us.
Yeah, well, and when the creator economy, I'm using air quotes, first was named as such, it included architects and it, it included industries that we don't typically think of as creator influenced or creator-led industries today, which is really interesting. So in a very short span of time, I don't want to say it's 20 years exactly, but within 20, maybe 30 years, right? The creator economy has changed so much, and most definitely in the last 5 to 10 years. And you're right, it's now creator economy is being aligned or being linked to those who create content that is published online. I think a lot of people think of the creator economy in that way. And you can see it when you read posts on social media, or you read articles, like you said, on Medium or whatever. And the reference to creator economy is somebody who's creating TikTok videos, somebody who's creating carousels on Instagram, somebody who's creating material that is used not necessarily in a sales process either, right? It's content out there for consumption. And I'm not sure that I actually agree. And I would love your opinion on this too. I'm not sure that I actually agree that that's creator economy. I think that those are creators, and I love me some creators. That's who I work with, but I don't know that that necessarily fits into my definition of creator economy, because economy would indicate an exchange of a monetary exchange. And if you're not making money off of it, if you're not selling it as a service or a product, is that part of an economy?
That's pretty interesting. I didn't really think about it like that.
Yeah.
But, well, I mean, an exchange of value, right? Like, it depends what you mean by value. And also, I feel that we live in an era when the concept of value is being sort of called into question in so many ways. Like, for example, if a company IPOs, right? They don't necessarily have to be profitable. I think like I don't think Facebook was profitable when it went public, and Zuckerberg was declared the world's youngest billionaire. I don't think they were making any money, right? So if so, what you mean by value, right, does not necessarily mean making money. Countries, I think countries are generally not profitable. They run on debt, but people trade in the currencies of those countries, right? The US dollar and all this, right? And they are considered stable because they're so big and so many people use them per se, right? And so many people believe in them. Like Facebook's valuation was driven by what's it called? Number of users, right? Not necessarily how much money they were making. Right. So the concept of value here is changing, and also another thing that I wanted to get into with the whole Web3 thing and NFTs and all that concept of art, what value art brings to the world, right? And I mean there were art pieces sold in art galleries even before NFTs and all that, and people, wealthy people, invested their money in art pieces and all that. At the value of an artist's work, like Jackson Pollock, for example. I think Jackson Pollock only became well known after he died. Right? This is apparently true for so many artists. including the writer Edgar Allan Poe, apparently, right? So, what do you think in terms of the value that creators bring to the world that we live in today?
So I think that I do think that's different. When I think of creator economy, when I think that, somebody or some organization, some business is putting itself in the creator economy space, that to me signifies that they want to be classified that way through labor statistics, right? The people who track all of the different types of businesses within the US, for instance. So to be labeled as a create part of the creator economy and be tracked as part of those statistics and all of that, I think there has to be an exchange of money, right? You have to be, in order to be labor, you have to, there has to be an exchange of money. Otherwise, it's a hobby or it's something fun, whatever that looks like outside of commerce.
By the way, artists
But
aren't always broke, right?
what?
Artists aren't always broke, right?
Oh,
There
they're
are
not.
YouTubers, that make millions, apparently. There's this guy called Peter Draws. He draws stuff, right? I think doodle. His focus is on doodling. He's a YouTube content creator, apparently.
Right. And I think that those are different classifications, right? There is a classification for things that fall outside of creator economy, even though you're creating content. So to go back to your question, value to me is different. Something can be valuable without an exchange of money. There doesn't have to be a commerce aspect to it for it to be valuable. People value your podcast without paying to listen to it, right? I value you spending the time talking to me about the creator economy. I really do. So there's value that is not tied to something commercial. Absolutely. And I also think that value is decided by the person who is taking in, who's consuming the content, not the person creating it. I can say my website is the most valuable one you'll ever read. I could say that, but that's not true. It's dependent on you reading it and saying, this is the most valuable website I've ever read. And I think that that gets mixed up a lot when people are always saying, provide value, or I'm providing so much value and I'm not getting the results that I want. It's because maybe the people that you think you're providing the value to disagree. They don't think that it's valuable for them. So value and commerce are separate, I think.
Yeah, it's now we're just basically getting into semantics, right?
Yeah,
Like,
yes.
the word value, I mean, like, if your parents told you to become a doctor or an engineer or as you were growing up, maybe what they meant was the kind of value that you provide to society in terms of functional value, right? Helping make people's lives better and all. But if you've made people's lives better and they're living long lives and they're living in clean environments, then after that, what are they living for, right? Why are they alive? So you have the how are they living, how are they alive, right? And then the why are they alive, right? So that sort of higher up the scale of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Why, what makes life living? Why even be here at all, right?
Well,
So
that's the highest level, right? The self-actualization. Oh my gosh, my kid is doing
Actualization,
that. Thank you.
So a lot of these higher human values, right? I feel a lot of them are dealt with by the artists and by the creators, the writers, and I think I came across this thing about how we moved from the agricultural age to the industrial age to the information age, and then the next one that was being talked about was called the story age, something called the story age. After all the machines are able to do all of the, food production and all get all our lower down the hierarchy of needs meet needs met, right? Then humans get sort of they get a promotion, right, to the top. And a lot of like the commoditization, I think Marx talked about this, like the commoditization, like that can come with capitalism, right? Then after that, well, what we have now is like people kind of like craving like novelty, right? We have smartwatches, but some people want to buy mechanical watches, right? Because it's so there's tradition behind it. It's made by a human being, not by a machine, you know, and all this. So this value of something being made by another person, bespoke for you, you know, there's something there, I think.
Well, there's absolutely something there because in order for somebody to do that and for it to resonate with you, they have to know you. And that also is part of Maslow's hierarchy. Maslow's hierarchy is that we have a sense of belonging and being seen and being part of something that is bigger than ourselves. And people can't create something for you that touches you to that level if they don't know you, if they don't understand you. And quite honestly, if they're not, in most instances, if they're not you or have not been you before.
So coming back to your website, I saw that you have quite a lot of stuff there. You have a course for sale. Tell us a bit about that.
It's a free course. It's make
Oh.
your brand pop through your unique value prop. Very catchy. but it helps to understand this uniqueness that you are bringing to the world. What is the thing that separates your art from somebody else's art? Is it the way you make the art? Is it the products that you use in the art? Is it the inspiration for your art? What are the things that make you different, that are going to matter to somebody else? That's what the course is about. It's helping to bring that out and then to help shape that messaging, because again, I'm all about the words that we use, whether it be written or spoken, to connect with other people. And that's what the course is about.
So do you think that creators wait have we defined what you mean by creator yet? So creators you're not talking about architects and all that. You're mainly talking about artists, writers, right?
Yes, yeah. And I do include podcasters and create people who create. I do include people who create content as creators because I'm not tracking you from a labor statistics standpoint.
Right. So, like, do you w at what level do you think the sort of business, the business savviness of creators is at these days? Do you think they require more education, more training, being able to see the work that they do as creators like it's a business?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So I still think that there is a divide. I think that people who are trying to make money, so they're using their creation as a service or a product, right? I still think that there's a divide within a lot of people, you know, personally themselves, that they have the creator side, which they know very well, which they enjoy, which they probably spend more time on than the entrepreneur side. And I'm hoping that that gap shortens because if you're trying to make money, right, you want to be a professional in a creative space, then you have to embrace your entrepreneur side. You have to embrace the business side because otherwise your business will never grow and you'll be either a hobbyist who makes a few bucks now and then, or you'll be frustrated because you can't seem to grow the business. You can't get out of that cycle of whatever cycle you're in, right? Like I sell a couple pieces of work a year, or I get booked, you know, in local venues, but I never seem to make it out of the region or whatever the objective is for the business. So earlier this year, I actually did an audio summit and I had 12 people who were talking as creators to creators about the business side, which I got very good reception for. People seemed to like that because light bulbs were going off, which is great. That was the whole point. And now I'm going to be starting these blueprint sessions, which is going to go deeper in the areas that I think are most important to make that shift from creator only to a creative business owner.
Hold up. Before we continue, if you don't mind, please go ahead and let our listeners know your web URL where they can find out more about you.
Sure, it's hubandcompany.com. That's HubandCompany.com.
And what I want to ask you next is about the name. Hub and Company. Tell us more about that name.
About Hub and Company?
Yeah, what do you mean by a hub?
Yeah, so my last name is Hubbard, and I just get a kick out of this. Lots of people think that I named the business after myself, but I actually didn't. It's basically the hub and spoke model is where I came up with the name. So I thought about it and I thought, okay, I don't want to have a business where I have 20 employees. I don't want an agency. I don't want 20 employees. I don't want to be responsible for payroll and payroll taxes and all the things that go with being an employer. So I thought, well, the hub and spoke model makes a lot of sense for me. I'm the hub, I'm the chief strategist, and then I bring on people per project as I need them, which are the spokes. So if I need a designer, if I need somebody to do some motion graphics, if I need a video edited, that kind of thing, I bring on the people who I need when I need them. So hub and spoke is the business model. Hub and company became the name.
Wow, that so so it's basically you, right? Like so the whole thing kind of like people work with you and you get the personnel that you require on board per project, right?
Correct.
Right, so what main projects are you dealing with at the moment, and also what kind of do I say companies? Shall I say companies or
Sure.
individuals? Do you work with?
Yes. So I actually am doing a CD release. I'm doing a jazz institute, so they run programming for jazz students. They are so the CD release obviously is publicity around the release of new music. The Jazz Institute is publicity. I'm doing PR for them around brand recognition. Then I have this very lovely man whose business is helping brand managers, people in brand management, and he's launching a whole accelerator program to help them get the learning, the training, and the connection that they miss either from school or on the job. It's fantastic. I also work with a man who's a small business advocate. So he is providing programming for small business owners to help, primarily solopreneurs, to help them, what I like to call have colleagues without cubicles, right? So they work for by themselves, but they have this space, which is the space he creates to work together on things, to brainstorm, to do all the things you would do if you had other people working in an environment with you. So those are the four that I have, and then I'm bringing on four more that, since they're not on board, I probably shouldn't talk about. But they are up, but they are in the creative space, so.
quite a diverse set quite a diverse clientele. So brand managers and people who work with small business owners as well, right?
Well, that's what I currently have. I've also done projects for other musicians, although I do have the two music focused businesses now. I've done other musicians. I've done quite a few musicians. I've written copy. So there's two parts of my business. There's the copywriting side and the PR side. So what I've talked about so far was the PR side. But on the copywriting side, I've written copy for I don't know how many people this year, all again in that creative space. So I have two parts of the business.
That was Andrea Hubbard.
Yes.
Andrea Hubbard. That was Andrea Hubbard from hubandcompany.com. Thank you very much. Sorry, Andrea. Andrea, not Andrea.
It's
Andrea.
okay.
I'm sorry about
It's
that.
okay.
So, Andrea, thank you very much for being on the show. And I look forward to having you on the show again sometime. Oh, we did not get into before I close up the show. Talk to us for a couple of minutes about your own blog. I saw that you have a blog under the Sparks section on the site. Talk us through a little bit about how you use your blog, how you use content marketing for your own business, and stuff like that.
Yeah, so I'm in the process of revamping the blog, and I'm going to make it more of a publication. So I'm going to really lean into being a publisher when it comes to content on the blog to help people who are in the arts and culture sector understand, number one, what's happening, which is why I have the feed of industry news. And secondly, how to leverage marketing communications for their own organizations, right? So I want it to be a space where people who are trying to connect with their audience to build, excuse me, those fans for life to come and get the tools and resources that they need in order to do that. So that's how I'm using my blog specifically as I'm working on this transition, I'm putting myself out and doing a lot of speaking, participating in summits, and being on fantastic podcasts such as yours to help get the word out about myself and what I do, but also about this whole arts and culture and how important it is to the economy nationally and locally, regionally, and being a beacon, being a source of help, a resource, a tool.
You sound like you're getting a bit emotional there, Andre. Are you
I'm sorry. I
okay?
do. It's so funny. I do get emotional. I feel so strongly about the contributions that that content creators, content makers, arts and culture has on our society. And I just love the fact that I get to help those who come to me for help make their mark. It's just, it's a joy. It truly is a joy.
They might not get the recognition sometimes, right? Yeah, and so that I mean that's like historically there has been a lot of there has been less of a focus on creators, artists, and more of a focus on people who provide like sort of like well what I mentioned the functional value to society like doctors, lawyers, engineers, and all that. So that's you making your mark out there for the community that you represent. And like I said, thank you very much for being on the show, and I look forward to having you again on the show sometime, Andrea. That was Andrea Hubbard from Hub and Company. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Andrea. Bye-bye.
Bye.